Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really, really delighted to be speaking on the phone all the way from Switzerland with John Dahlgren. He has recently published a young adult fantasy novel titled The Tides of Avarice. The book delves into all those fantasy things that lovers of books like that like to read about: cannibals, lethal carnivores, mysterious fortune tellers, voodoo magic, pirates, shipwrecks, spaceships, and so much more. We are going to talk with John about the importance of having children read fantasy. But before we talk to him, I'd like you to know a little bit about him. John Dahlgren is a psychologist and a member of the Swiss Psychologist Federation. He has been working as a marketing director at a pharmaceutical company in Switzerland since 1998. During his school years, Dahlgren's favorite subjects were music, literature, and drama. At this stage, he also became more seriously interested in writing and took a part of every year's short stories contest arranged by the school. After finishing college, he put his writing interests aside and enrolled in the medical faculty. After 4 years of studying medicine, he discovered he was more interested with the human mind rather than the pathological conditions of the body and switched to psychology. He received his Master's of Science degree in the year 2000. But you know, he never lost his love for writing. And besides his research work, he is now engaged in several book projects for both younger readers and adults. He is also a scriptwriter and a composer. In his free time, he enjoys playing the piano, reading, and traveling. John lives in Switzerland with his wife and two children. Hi, John.
Hello. Hi, Irene. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to be talking to you all the way from Switzerland.
Yeah, it's a long way.
I know, and it sounds like you're just right here sitting beside me, so this is great.
Yeah, it's 7 hours, I think. It's the time difference is 7 hours.
Yeah, well... Yeah. It probably is, but it's amazing how we can't converse as though you're just sitting right here beside me.
Yeah, well, this is great.
I know. I love this kind of conversation. So you have a very interesting book, The Tides of Avarice, as you call it. And this has got to do a lot with fantasy. Now, you know, fantasy versus reality. Let's talk about that.
Yes, it's a huge topic to begin with. I would like to mainly concentrate on younger readers.
Yeah.
Although the Tides of Avarice is actually aimed for young adults or above, or adults.
Uh-huh.
That was my publisher who decided that because. There's a certain amount of violence and things that are perhaps not suitable for younger kids.
Sure. So,
but I would still like to talk about, you know, fantasy stories or fairy tales for younger children, like 10 and below, because I have a boy, he's 8, and my daughter is 5. So I have got my share of reading, trying to read to them old classic fairy tale stories and new ones as well. So it's a quite a challenging thing to competing with video games and cartoons and everything.
Yeah, how do you get your kids interested in reading when, like you say, there's so much competition with video games and cartoons?
As I said, I haven't read my book to my children because they're not ready for that kind of fantasy yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. The trick is, I think the sooner you start, the better. I could tell you an interesting story that happened the other day that might be related to this. I was taking a walk with my two children just to the playground. And my son said that, "Oh, I met a new kid." who was living not so far away from us. I said, sure, you can bring him along if you like. The more the merrier and all that. So we were just walking along when I noticed that the boy, the other boy, had brought a cap gun with him. Okay, I didn't worry much about that. I was playing with toy guns and so on when I was young too. But the problem was that first I had the responsibility of him and of course my two children, which I know, but the boy I didn't know. So I said, okay, everybody keep to the right when we're walking. You know, the cars are passing, so we will be walking to the right slowly and be very careful. And suddenly, this boy just jumped out in the middle of the road and started shooting at cars. You know, at the car in front, very aggressive, I shouted at him, like, get out of there. I mean, what are you doing? And he has shrugged and thought nothing of it. Like, okay, so please don't do that, I said. People don't like that, and it's dangerous for you. You know, you cannot just jump out into the road like that. And after a couple of minutes, he started again. And this time the car, you know, made an angry beep. I said, you see, people don't like that. And he was just like, you know, shooting away with his gun. And okay, so luckily for me, it started to rain, so I had an excuse to bring the boy home. And then a couple of days later, actually it was not that long ago, the parents invited my son, William, to the boy's birthday. He was 9. And okay, I said, so I went with my son there, and there were quite a bunch of children playing around. And I followed them, and I happened to look into his room, or playroom, if you call it. And I was a little bit surprised to notice that there weren't any fancy stories or fairy tales or anything on his shelves. But what you could find a lot of were video games. And I don't mean I need a little 3-inch pile of CDs. I mean, it was like walking into a video game store. He had everything. All the game consoles and everything. I looked a little bit at the titles. They were definitely not for him. They were like 16 plus and even 18 plus, and they were very violent games. And after I had a chat with his parents, and surprisingly, they were very, very calm, very, very sophisticated. The father was a pharmacist, I think, and I couldn't see any connection between his aggressive behavior, which he probably got from watching all of these violent, playing all of these violent video games, and in relation to his, you know, jumping out into the street and just shooting away with his cap gun. So I just asked, how is he doing? And we were planning to go to Disney World. Euro Disney World. Here. But, you know, we're always so busy and, we don't have the time. Okay. So, I really wish that he would read something sometime. And I really wish that he would. But, you know, he likes to play his games. And I was on the verge of asking, so you mean you're telling me that he goes out and buys his games himself? you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who provides this for him? I didn't ask that, but it was obvious that there was an ignorance, I would call it, from the parents' part.
Is it ignorance, or is it just in denial?
You can call it also. They're saying that I'm too busy.
Too busy. That's just
I'm too busy
thing.
To spend 10 minutes
uh-huh.
with my
uh-huh.
own child reading a story.
Uh-huh.
I would say they're busy being lazy
uh-huh.
because it's so much more easier or more comfortable if you would call it that. Just, you know, here you go, here is another game, or play with your game, or I will switch on the TV for you, or watch your cartoon, that is going to do whatever he's going to do.
Of course, because it's good for 2 or 3 hours.
Exactly. But the problem is that the longer you wait with
mm-hmm.
these kind of things, the attention span, actually this has been proven, becomes less the more television and video games you play than when you read.
Mm-hmm.
So
John,
I
was going to say, it just what you're talking here brought up something that is kind of in my mind. And, you know, when the fantasy, there are just a lot of groups that do not allow people, or the children, to read fantasy. And what I'm finding, it's a lot of the religious groups. And when Harry Potter came out, I mean, that just, you know, swept the whole world.
But
the religious groups don't allow their children to read fantasy. In fact, there are many books that came out since Harry Potter and sort of, you know, with a rich religious undertones. And I would like you to kind of address that for me.
I have read about, I heard a lot about that, the Harry Potter phenomenon, as they call it,
mm-hmm.
when, you know, it suddenly exploded, like, now every kid in the world wanted to read about Harry Potter and his adventures. And I read about those who were against this kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is harmful, and I think... some parents, they actually think that reading fantasy stories will harm the child's mind. They usually use words like, oh, ignore that, it's just a fantasy, or he's
mm-hmm.
living in a fantasy world. I think this sense encouraged many parents to see some kind of connection between fantasy stories and psychological illness, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Some parents, for instance, worry when their children invent imaginary friends. You know, they're fearing that a symptom of something must be wrong.
Uh-huh.
And the fantasy creatures and events in stories have been seen as encouraging children's minds in the direction of unreality, dreaminess, impracticality, and even disenchantment with the real world. You know, for example, where in which a bus, for example, it's kind of a letdown after you have heard about magic carpets.
Mm-hmm.
But in response to that, I, as a pro-fantasy writer, I would say that this connection between fantasy and mental illness is not only wrong, but actually quite the opposite of the truth. Fantasy doesn't distort reality, but rather enriches our appreciation of it. I believe that.
Well, also, you know, sometimes we can fantasize and it does become reality, and on the positive end of it, because we project, you know, we can also say that we're actually setting goals, you know, and some people would understand setting goals, but sometimes we can fantasize, let's say we're fantasizing going to Disney World or Disneyland, as you mentioned,
exactly.
you know, the family, and we can fantasize going in on the rides and going into all those, the exhibits and so on, and then it could become a reality. So there's that fine line, isn't there?
It is. You're absolutely right. And I think you can even take this argument further and suggest that appreciation of fantasy is a prerequisite to the development of a range of intellectual skills.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the other main mode by which the mind gains a way of dealing with reality by engaging with unreality is what we call science.
Yes.
So most of the inventions that have changed our lives, the creations in arts and science, were acquired through fantasies or visions or daydreams.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They were daydreams that materialized because their designer imagined and refined the, let's call it, phantom of the object until it was given existence in reality.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I don't know if you know the author Jules Verne, a French...
I don't, but maybe some of the listeners do.
He was a French fiction writer living in the 19th century. And he planted a seed for future scientists when he wrote a fantasy story, fiction book about traveling to the moon in 1865. And in 1969, we all know what happened.
Yeah.
We have conquered outer space, but not before those visionaries who made it possible had conquered inner space.
Exactly.
And that is where the true blueprints of future existences are born.
Yeah.
In our minds, and thus the impossible, through unfaltering belief, becomes possible. But actually, everything starts with a fantasy. Then, when it has settled in, let's call it, and been accepted by the general public as normal, it becomes known as a reality or a part of it.
Yeah.
Or actually, I would say a fantasy is far, far more powerful than a reality and can change it just like that when we believe strongly enough in something.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with John Dahlgren, author of The Tides of Avarice. As you've heard so far, John is giving us things to really, really think about, both from a parent's point of view, but as well as that of a psychologist. So please stay tuned because there is so much more from John. Now, I'm going to throw in another fine line. There's such a thing as fantasy, and there's such a thing as narcissism.
Yeah.
That turns, you know, that fantasy, you say, turns into reality, but then narcissistic people can then create their own reality in the fantasy.
Yeah. Well, it's if we take, for example, reading to children,
mm-hmm.
which many parents they neglect to do. Like 10 minutes per day is not a long time.
No kidding.
And the fantasy worlds also have the significant emotional and spiritual value that they focus the mind away from the self.
Mm-hmm.
So while children might make some casual association with, I don't know, Cinderella or Peter Pan, they do not typically confuse their own circumstances and possibilities with those of the fairy tale characters. So rather than collapsing these characters into the child's sense of self, an aesthetic delight carries the child to expand outward, mm-hmm. in the direction of Cinderella or Peter Pan or whomever. And this expansion away from the self is one of the values of the educational, moral, and
mm-hmm.
I believe spiritual value of stimulating children's or young adults' imagination with fantasy stories. So I'm really against these people who are, saying that that fantasy is you know, you should not read fantasy books. You know, it's a distortion from reality. You should not run away from reality.
Or a cult. I've had it. You know, I've heard that the people call it a cult too. Now, you know, so we're talking about the smaller children, Peter Pan, Cinderella, the princess, the little girls love to be a princess. Now, as we get into the older age group of kids that start reading more into, you know, the travel, and it's just a totally different type of fantasy. And I want you kind of to address that. So, you know, we sort of talked about the little ones. Now, how about the older kids and the fantasy stories? And like yours, for instance, you know, you said there's some violence in it.
It is.
And magic and, you know, things like that. So
it is. I mean, if you take Tolkien or C.S. Lewis, Narnia and so on, of course, there is violence. And there almost always has to be some kind of threat going on. But I think it's important to not to go into detail, you know, gruesome details, but just keep it as a mere mentioning, rather than focus on it, because the you will use your own imagination, and you will see the picture in your head, and one should not over-describe something. You should not either, you know, scare, you know, some even teenagers, it could be, you know, a little bit oversensitive sometimes. Yeah. It's very important to, you have to balance it very, very carefully when you write fantasy, because it's so boundless, you know, it's so limitless that you can do, you can write anything. But you have a sort of a responsibility as well to whom you're addressing the book. To whom do I want the, you know, to read my book, and what you know, what would I like to tell them, you know, what kind of reaction do I, would I like to expect them to have, and so on.
So, as a psychologist, I'm going to ask you from that perspective. As a psychologist, at what point is there that crossover from the Cinderella, Peter Pan to what you write that, let's say, that does have some threat in it, some violence?
It's just a step, really. When I was a kid, I read, you know, the old European-based fairy tales like Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, and so on, and even what do you call it, Hansel and Gretel in English.
I know that one.
I remember I bought that on an like an audio book, what do you call it, a tape on, bought the book on tape, and I listened to it. I was about, I think, 7 or 8. The voice actress was so believable, and they had these sound effects with creaking noises. That I freaked out. I was so scared that I couldn't, you know, listen to it. With the old witch in the gingerbread house. So yes, you have to be. Actually, when you read to, only the parents know their own child. You know how sensitive they are. You can always tweak. You can always change. Or edit. Because it's these stories are not written in stone. They were never meant to be. You can tweak them as you want, but it's important to have them to listen to these stories. Very important. If you try to pass on them to read I don't know, Pride and Prejudice or something like that, it's not going to work because they don't contain that sort of this limitless, well, the escape of from reality that fantasy books provide.
John, of the old classics, some authors have gone ahead and changed them because they feel that there are maybe some areas in there that aren't conducive to what they their beliefs are. And, you know, maybe that there is violence. And, like, you know, the nursery rhyme, the old woman who lived in a shoe, and, you know, she beat her children. And so now a lot of the parents and groups are advocating against that because it promotes violence.
Hmm.
And so, you know, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, you can always find. I mean, it's up to the parent to choose what is suitable for their children to read. But if you look around, I mean, now we are so bombarded with. I mean, from what we see on the television, video games and so on, it's almost impossible to protect them, I mean, the younger children from seeing at least some scary things once a day.
Yeah.
Because even if even if one parent doesn't buy these games or show scary movies or something like that to a child, there's no guarantee that that child will go to his friend and watch it over there, you know.
Exactly.
So it's very difficult to control, but at least we should try, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sensitive topic. The whole, as you said, about the violence, and that they, now they have tweaked stories to be more cute.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Disney's versions of what was it with the shoe? Yeah, that's Cinderella.
Yeah, exactly.
Which from the beginning was very gruesome.
Mm-hmm.
Very gruesome, and it has been modified and been made so cute, so it's, you know, it's nothing.
Right, and little girls want to be Cinderella.
Exactly.
And that's their fantasy.
Yeah, and then some parents ask, are even asking, are they, you know, are Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Cinderella, uh-huh. are they good role models?
Right.
And no matter how politically incorrect stories about evil stepmothers or ladies in distress or cannibalistic old women may be, fairy tales will always be present in one way or another. I mean, fantasy will never go away. That's for sure.
I really believe that. I believe that, John. John, tell our listening audience a little bit about your book, The Tides of Avarice, and just sort of a brief description of it so that they know what it's about.
Okay, well, it's actually a totally anthropomorphic written story. Anthropomorphic meaning that I have applied human thoughts and reasoning abilities to animals. So, you know, the Wind in the Willows, it's a typical example of an anthropomorphic story. However, in this case, it's a little bit different because it's quite adult, even though the hero is a lemming, and he's a librarian, and he's living lives a quiet life and working in the library and secretly hoping to steal a kiss from his girlfriend and keeping his mom happy and so on. And there is political intrigues Okay, he gets kidnapped by pirates because he has a photographic memory of a treasure map that he found, and so on. So it's more like he gets drawn into a huge, like, almost epic, like pirate adventure set in the fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
With an evil fox as the pirate captain.
And you said that this was for a teen. What's the minimum age?
I would say 14 plus.
Yeah. And of course, then something like this, the adults would thoroughly enjoy as well.
Yeah, I hope.
Yeah.
Most of the reviews I've received are from adults.
Adults, sure.
Yeah. But okay, it came out
mm-hmm.
this year, so... I'm still waiting to hear from the younger readers.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, John, tell our listening audience your website address where they can find out more about you and your book.
www.johndahlgren.com.
Okay, it's John, and I'll spell the rest of it. So it's John,
DAHLGREN.com.
Yes, John,
DAHLGREN.
Good.com.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, John. It's been great talking to you, and thanks for coming all the way from Switzerland right into our homes and into our ears. This is great. I just thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and I know that our listeners have too. It's sort of, you know, I'm sure that it's giving them some thoughts. You know, especially for parents, and sort of especially if they've been kind of thinking that maybe fantasy isn't something that they would want their children to read. But you certainly have given another perspective on this, and I do appreciate it, because I do agree with you, too, that fantasy stimulates the mind. And like we had talked about earlier, you know, fantasy becomes reality, and in many, many positive ways. So I do appreciate you mentioning that. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to say, and to all of this, that these you can always modify versions. I mean, I'm speaking to the parents now. You can always twist it a bit. Sleeping Beauty can be Sleeping Handsome.
Mm-hmm.
And you can edit out the part you think is not suitable, or you can change them all together. Remember that fairy tales were told, you know, around the fireside,
yeah,
a long time ago. They were never meant to be written in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the classic fairy tales actually cast spells on kids and are engaging their imagination in ways modern authors can only dream of. So my final word would be, first would be, so get out your storybook and prepare to read happily ever after.
I love it. Thank you very much, John.
Thank
listeners,
you,
Irene. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
Thank you.